Hello, and welcome to Leading the Way, Women in Higher Education, a podcast dedicated to celebrating, supporting, and advancing women in higher education across Michigan. Hello, and welcome to Leading the Way, Women in Higher Education, where we spotlight the voices shaping leadership and equity in higher education. I'm Dr. Cynthia Rooker, and today we're joined by our outstanding and visionary leader, Dr. Selena Samuel, Senior Vice President for Business Operations at Lansing Community College, and she is the Executive Board Member of the Michigan ACE Women's Network. Dr. Samuel is also the host of the 2026 Michigan ACE Women's Network Annual Conference, a transformative event that brings together educators from across Michigan for 2 days of inspiration, networking, and sisterhood. In this episode, we'll explore what makes next year's conference so special, how it continues to empower women leaders, and what attendees can expect from the plenary sessions, breakout discussions, and much, much more. So can you tell us, what does the Michigan ACE Conference 2026 mean to you? And tell us, how does it reflect the mission of the Women's Network?
Wow, thank you for the question. I think I will kind of start with the mission. So Michigan ACE is part of a national system of networks that are focused on advancing and supporting women in higher education. And the mission of Michigan ACE is in part to foster growth and promote institutional excellence. So with this in mind, the conference is one of many activities that we host each year to develop, encourage, and equip women who work in higher education to serve and lead well, regardless of whether they operate in traditional leadership roles and regardless of challenges facing the higher education industry. I was introduced to Michigan ACE about 10 years ago. My introduction was through the annual conference. I was new to higher education, so the conference was instrumental in my getting acclimated, and it actually cemented my desire to become a leader in the higher education space. I think it was just being in the room with hundreds of women focused on continuous growth and pursuing personal excellence for the good of not just themselves, but their institutions and the communities they served. It was inspiring, to say the least. So for me, the conference helped me to see my work in higher education as more than a job, but a call to support the students at my institution and my community at the highest level. So in 2025 and 2026, having the support of our college president, Dr. Steve Robinson, and our board of trustees to host the conference is something I personally appreciate because it gives me an opportunity to support an organization that has impacted my career journey in a meaningful way. So it's kind of a full circle moment for me.
Oh, that's fabulous. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That's great. Well, what about the theme for the 2026 conference?
Well, the 2026 theme is Elevated, Ascend, and Transform Your World. With this in mind, the conference team is looking to inspire attendees to rise up as leaders, both in formal leadership positions and to lead from where they are. The theme is in part inspired by the work of Michigan ACE, specifically how the organization consistently encourages women to aspire to leadership positions. The theme acknowledges that the proverbial glass ceiling can be broken for those who aspire to break it. The theme includes the word your, which is purposeful. And the reason that it's there is because we want to acknowledge that if you, in fact, aspire to lead, then you must make moves towards your ultimate goal. And there are things that only you can do to transform your situation or to initiate changes or innovations at your institution. It infers the critical need for personal ownership and investment towards the goals we have for ourselves and for our institutions. I would also say that the theme considers the fact that not every person wants to serve in a formal leadership position, but they desire to bloom where they're planted, making a difference from where they currently sit. So when you look at the conference programming, we're going to make sure that we support both ends, because ultimately people have different goals and we hope to meet them where they're at, and providing the professional development options that address the unique needs for our members so they can ascend to whatever the next level might look like for them as individuals.
Well, great. So that means whether they're a first timer or one who has been there for many years attending the conference, they're going to be inspired by this theme and also the different things that you're going to have for next year's conference. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, that's
absolutely the goal.
Great. Well, so speaking of goals, what are some of the key goals that you have in store for next year's conference?
Yes. You know, I'm hopeful that attendees will be energized to continue the work that they're already doing to support the students across the state. I'm equally hopeful that people will walk away with new skills and tips on how to lead in their current roles. I'm hopeful that the conference programming will spark new ideas and lead to greater success for colleges and universities across the state. I would also like to see attendees share what they learned at the conference with their colleagues when they get back to their offices. And last but not least, I'm hopeful that, you know, leaders from institutions across the state will see great value in investing in professional development for employees and value in having an association with Michigan ACE.
Oh, that's great. So Michigan ACE is also known for fostering strong connections. And so during the conference, how are you going to create, like, as far as creating space, as far as meaningful networking, are you going to have specific sessions or groups or what can you tell us about that?
That's a good question. A portion of the conference programming in 2026 will be geared towards networking and helping attendees understand how networking can benefit their everyday work life. So we have structured networking activities that are planned because we want to intentionally provide space for meaningful networking and encourage attendees to talk to one another, to share information, to create lasting connections, and foster collaboration. So that's what we're hoping to do. And part of the emphasis on networking came from the feedback that we received from prior conference attendees, that's something that they really enjoy and hope we do more of. So in 2026, that's one of our priorities.
Oh, fabulous. Great. Well, how about, can you share a story or a specific moment that you have in mind from maybe one of the conferences that you had attended that captured like the spirit or something of the community, like the empowerment, where you saw somebody with perhaps an aha moment or something when they were maybe attending a session or having a conversation?
Yeah, I think for me, what captures the spirit of Michigan ACE, I had a conversation with an attendee once that I will absolutely never forget. It was someone that I didn't know, and this happened a few years ago, but she was a first-time attendee, and she was telling me about how wonderful the conference was, and while it helped her understand her role as a community college professional, and it helped her be more interested in the profession and in the industry in general, that it also helped her grow as an individual. At that moment, it became clear to me that conference programming is about the whole person, that the information, ideas, and tips you receive are transferable, not just from one position to another, but to your personal life. And that's something that just really sticks with me. Everything that the person shared led me to believe that they were inspired by the supportive atmosphere. And they were also just excited about how quickly they became part of the Michigan ACE community because of the way the conference was set up and the multiple ways that they can interact and get to know people. I also walked away with this person understanding that they were empowered because they walked away with practical tools
to approach real life situations, not just at work, but beyond. So for me, when I think about the conference, I'm well aware that, yes, this is about you and the work that you're doing, but this is also about you as a whole person.
Wow, that's transformative. That's amazing. That's fantastic. Wow, thanks so much for sharing that. So in other words, as far as your hope for attendees, they go and like this story that you just shared, what are some of the things that you want them to walk away with, to take back to their institution for next year's conference for them to take away?
Thank you. I think that's an excellent question. I would like attendees to leave excited about the unique role they play in supporting education in Michigan. I would like them to be more interested in the higher education industry in general and excited about the role that they play in their lives and helping them meet their goals and dreams. Ideally, people who attend the conference will be more invested in leading the work. They would be inspired to continue to upskill for the betterment of themselves and their institutions. I'm hopeful that attendees will go back to their places of work empowered to use their voice, empowered to share ideas for improvement, that they would walk away pondering how they can lead from their current roles with greater impact. I'm also hopeful that people will walk away with the confidence to apply for positions, programs, and educational credentials they may have been pondering for quite a while, but just didn't move the needle or didn't move it forward. I'm hopeful that attendees will walk away ready to take action, to just do it, to transform their world in both small and big ways, personally, and as it relates to their careers. Lastly, I'm hopeful that participants will leave with a greater understanding that Michigan ACE is a resource for them and their institutions. Not only does Michigan ACE provide professional development annually, but throughout the year. You know, Michigan ACE facilitates mentorship and non-traditional leadership opportunities. There's just so much for people in higher education that they can get by connecting with Michigan ACE.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, to take away being excited, especially after such a great conference, I'm sure, excited, empowered, and confident. That will be some great tools to take back to their institution. That's great. Thank you so much. So what are some ways that people can take back to their, as far as for their institutions, where they can stay connected beyond the conference, like after the conference is done, as you mentioned? So how can they continue being engaged with Michigan ACE? What are some things throughout the year?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's important to know for those who are interested in Michigan ACE that we have a wonderful website that kind of shares how you can be involved throughout the year. But interested parties can go to miacenetwork.org. There, they will learn about the different committees that are available for them to join. They will learn about institutional representatives who serve each of the member institutions by putting on programming throughout the year. They will learn about programs that are put on by the Women of Color Collaborative, who puts on events a couple times a year that they can go to. And those events rotate at different institutions, so it's really good for people to attend those. They'll also learn about the Senior Shadow Program. So if there's someone who aspires to be a dean or some sort of a leader within the college, whether it's a provost or a vice president, through the Senior Shadow Program, they're able to apply to have a mentor at another institution that who serves in the role that they want to serve in the future. And they actually are allowed to be mentored and shadow this person in some respects for a whole entire year. They're also able to go to this website and learn about the Distinguished Woman in Higher Education Leadership Award, which for me is always one of the highlights of the conference because it allows us to really celebrate and honor people who have done great work in the higher education space. And when people are honored, it's inspiring. And I think, at least for me, it motivates me to want to be involved even more because I see
the great work that people have been doing. And I think that the other thing that's really important for Michigan ACE and trying to get people involved is to let you know that all are welcome to the things that we do for Michigan ACE, that the principles that are taught here are, they transcend demographics. And so you can go to the conference and you can learn regardless of where you are in your career and regardless of your demographic background. So MIACENetwork.org, you know, that's the place to go to get more information on what's done through Michigan ACE.
Well, that's fabulous. Thank you so much. So thank you for sharing your insights, your passion for the Michigan ACE Women's Network Annual Conference. Your leadership truly, truly continues to inspire and uplift women across Michigan's higher education landscape, and especially here at Lansing Community College. So thank you so much. I appreciate this conversation today. It's been great. So thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you for your time, and thank you for the questions. And I appreciate what you do also. And honestly, for me, it's just an honor to be involved in any way, shape, or form. So thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to Leading the Way, Women in Higher Education, a part of the LCC Connect Network. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep leading, keep learning, and keep lifting others along the way. Thanks for tuning in to Leading the Way, Women in Higher Education. To listen to this episode and others, visit lccconnect.com. Until next time, keep leading, keep learning, and keep lifting others along the way.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect. Voices. Vibes. Vision.
Engaged learning and academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College. To help students navigate their educational career, LCC has created a proactive approach to learning and providing students with several academic support services. To find out what's available, visit lcc.edu/services.
Hey there, this is Dedalian, and I want to invite you to join me for a show called Behind the Connection. It dives into what's happening behind the scenes here at LCC Connect. It also provides you early introductions to new podcasts, some of the Connect initiatives that we are putting forth, and of course, insights into the concept of building the voices, vibes, and vision of LCC Connect. Find out more about it at our website. It's lccconnect.org.
Aloha! I'm Ben Hassinger, Michigan's ukulele ambassador and founder of Mighty Uke Day, a celebration of the diminutive yet dynamic ukulele. This year, we'll be kicking things off with a special fundraiser on Saturday, April 11th at the Sir Pizza Old Town Pub. The day begins with our monthly morning meeting of Laugh, the Lansing Area Ukulele Group, followed by concerts, group strums, open mic, a silent auction, and plenty of ukulele fun. Scheduled performers include the Ukulele Kings, Vinyl Resting Place, the PT Strummers, and others to be announced. We'll also be recording the Mighty Uke Day 16 theme song for a viral video release. Join us for this celebration of strumming and singing, Saturday, April 11th at the Sir Pizza Old Town Pub. Proceeds for the Mighty Uke Day benefit the nonprofit Music is the Foundation. For more information and advance tickets, visit MightyUkeDay.com. That's MightyUkeDay.com.
Returning to school can be a challenge. If you're a recent high school grad, a new Michigan Reconnect participant at LCC, or a GED holder, we want to help you succeed with extra support in reading, writing, and math. LCC's Coalition for College and Career Readiness presents College Connect, a four-week, no-cost initiative created to prepare students with the tools needed to succeed at LCC. College Connect begins in July, but seating is limited. To find deadline and enrollment information, visit lcc.edu/cc.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join us as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Welcome to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. I'm John Saloji, and beside me today is my co-host, Robin Moore.
Hello.
Today we are joined by Stephen Mac Jones and Rob Edwards. Stephen Mac Jones is the author of the popular August Snow series. He is a two-time recipient of Michigan Notable Book Award. He is also a recipient of the Nero Award and a finalist for Seamus Award and many other awards as well. In addition, he is also a proud recipient of the prestigious Kresge Arts in Detroit Literary Fellowship and the keynote speaker at this year's Rally of Writers. Rob Edwards is a video producer and author, also our colleague at LCC, and current president of A Rally for Writers. So welcome, Stephen and Rob.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes.
We're very happy to have you. Rob, this is the second year we've talked with you about A Rally of Writers. So tell us, for this year, when and where will the Rally of Writers be taking place?
This year is the 39th gathering of A Rally of Writers.
Oh my.
Yes. It is going to be held on April 11th. It runs from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and it will be held at Lansing Community College's West Campus, so out in Delta Township.
Okay. You were on our podcast last year promoting the Rally of Writers along with the keynote last year, right,
mm-hmm.
Aaron?
That was
so
Aaron. Yep.
What made you want to have Stephen as your keynote speaker this year?
Well, I have been thinking about Stephen for a while, but it was 2 or 3 years ago, I ended up going to the Michigan Notable Book Awards event, and Stephen was the keynote speaker there, and he literally brought the house down. It was amazing. And I have been a fan ever since. So I said, he has got to be our keynote.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And what an honor is to have you in this space with us. Thank you for gracing us with your presence.
Oh, well, you make me sound more grandiose than I really am. Which reminds me, I have laundry to do when I get home. But no, this is a wonderful honor, and I'm very grateful to the Rally of Writers and Rob for inviting me.
When you get up to give your keynote speech at Rally of Writers, what do you hope emerging writers will take away from your remarks?
I really hope that they'll take away a sense of hope, primarily because a lot of writers that are starting out, regardless of their age, they don't know where to begin. They know where their story begins, but the business side of writing is shrouded in fog, and it takes some courage and takes fortitude and a bit of knowledge to navigate your way through the writing world.
So what was the defining moment when you realized you wanted to become a writer?
Well, shortly after coming out of the birth canal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Purpose.
Yeah. It's been a while. I was my brother and I were always encouraged by our parents to read. They always found that reading was the key to understanding the world around us. And my father had a ninth grade education before he started working. My mother had a bit of college, but they always knew that reading was understanding the world. And that's where my love of words began and writing shortly thereafter.
You had mentioned kind of the business side of writing, and I've heard other authors say, you know, really focus on the writing and then worry about the business aspects later.
Yes.
Do you feel that way, or do you think there is importance in understanding the business aspects of writing as well?
Well, first and foremost for me is the writing. Mm. Understanding your story, giving the best part of yourself to the writing. But once the writing is done, the editing is done, the fourth, fifth, sixth draft is done. If you're feeling like, well, I'd like a larger audience to enjoy my words, learn from my words, be moved by them, that's when you move into the business part of writing. And it's hard to navigate sometimes. It's hard to get an agent. It's hard for that agent sometimes to find a publishing house. And the marketing. Don't think just because your book sold that you're done. You have to be an integral part of moving the book forward. And you have to learn the ways to do that and become comfortable with those ways.
That's true. Yeah. That's true, yeah. The comfortability of it. You have to ask people for reviews.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You have to be that forward.
Yeah. And I would say, so I'm thinking about, I have a few friends that self-publish, right? You know, you've got that platform we can use. So, you know, we have Amazon, right? And you can self-publish on that platform. And I'm just wondering, I heard you say that you have to constantly put it out there. You have to get reviews. Talk to me about that.
Rob, you want to go a little bit on that?
Well, yeah. Some publishing houses, from what I understand, don't do much marketing for you at all. They make sure that your book is available and you are required to get it out there.
There's such a thing in, well, I was going to say the publishing world, but in the business world, of something called a loss leader. Mm-hmm. And essentially that means some publishing houses will publish your book and bury it, primarily to take a tax loss. I'm not saying that's widespread, but it is a part of the business. Okay. And as the writer, you have to put your business head on and challenge the norms. Mm. Get on social media, any social media. Mm-hmm. I hate being on social media, but I know that I have to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Facebook guy. I'm not an Instagram guy. Here I am sitting at my typewriter smiling for the camera.
Yeah.
No, it's difficult, but you have to change your ways. And we were talking about self-publishing. The same applies to self-publishing. Mm-hmm. Self-publishing even more so, because you have to learn to promote yourself. And through social media, through whatever means you can. And you have to be comfortable with that. So, yeah, there's a lot involved. You're not done with the child after the baby is born.
That's right. You're never done with the child.
Yeah. Stephen, before you were a full-time writer, that you worked in advertising and marketing, talking about both the business of writing as well as just the act of writing, how has that experience helped or hindered your writing career?
Well, to be really honest with you, I really, maybe despised is too strong of a word, didn't really enjoy marketing, advertising as much as I thought I was going to. I did have those wonderful, carefree, Scrubs-like moments in advertising and marketing communications, but the one thing that I did get out of it, and it saved my behind on the first book, was learning to rewrite and rewrite the rewrite and being fast about it. So that is one thing that I learned in advertising and marketing communications that has helped me immensely. In advertising, you can take the best commercial, the best magazine copy to your creative director, and your creative director will say, "This is really tremendous. I think you need rewrites here, here, and here." And it's, you're not going to argue with, you know, you're arguing against your best interest, right, which is a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So you learn to rewrite and polish. And that's the one thing that I got out of 35 years of my life in advertising.
35 years.
You know, there's a, I think the quote is associated with Kurt Vonnegut, who said, "Books are not written, they're rewritten."
Yeah. I like that. Yes. I like that.
Yes.
So how did your journey evolve from poet to award-winning playwright to a crime novelist? Those are different levels. Come on.
They're different levels, yes. And again, adaptability comes in. I first wanted to be an award-winning poet until I realized that nobody likes mediocrity. And I was a good but mediocre poet. I loved Octavio Paz and Pablo Neruda and all of those writers, Seamus Heaney and Nikki Giovanni. I loved all of them, but they did what I couldn't do, and that was to raise the word to something sacred. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I'm a good poet, not an award-winning poet. Let me move on. So I moved on to playwriting, mm-hmm, which was a lot of fun. And involves a lot of people, which is both good and bad. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed playwriting. But while the expenses of playwriting are never ending, I mean, bringing something to the stage, you're asking for a theater to invest $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 of their money into something untested. Mm-hmm. And then I just flowed into novels because I really love, you know, the classic mysteries. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got me through the flu, where you wrap a blanket around you, right, and have a cup of tea with lemon and read Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
And I love the genre. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Other than Agatha Christie, who are some of your favorite authors in the mystery genre?
That's fairly easy. I'm going to forget some, but James Salas, who recently passed away, he was wonderful. His first book, I would suggest, is The Long-Legged Fly, and it's a short book, but it's tremendous. Walter Mosley, Robert B. Parker was a great inspiration, and of course, Dashiell Hammett, and some of the modern writers that are always discovering new ways to bring a mystery to you. So, those are just a
great
few.
Yeah, and actually, I was thinking of some of those very authors as I was thinking about names for detectives that come up, you know, in stories like Mike Hammer and Sam Spade, and I put E.C. Right. Rollins in that too, all have great names. And I think August Snow has a great name too.
Oh, thank you.
How did you come up with that? How did you come up with the name August Snow?
Well, it's probably one of the more boring stories that I can regale you with. I was mowing the lawn one summer, And the two words August and snow settled on my mind, and I thought, that's stupid. You know, it doesn't snow in August. And those words kept burrowing into my brain for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, I thought, well, I'm going to have to do something about this. It either means I need talk therapy to get to the root of that, or I can use that as a name for a story and save money that I would have spent on talk therapy.
Right.
So that's where the name came from. It really was my wife who defined it, the name for me. She was coming downstairs in her house, and I was downstairs, and we were about to pass each other, and she said, boy, you know, I've been thinking about that name, August Snow. It really encapsulates the character, because like August, he can run hot. He's very quick to get hot under the collar. Mm. And like Snow, he's very cool.
Mm.
And I told her, yeah, I know that, baby. And she just shook her head and went to the kitchen. And I stood there thinking, oh, my God, I didn't realize that until now.
Mm.
So it was really Mary-Kate's.
Wonderful. Yeah. So Detroit feels like a character in your work. What makes this, I'll say the D. Can I just say the D?
Yes, you
the
may.
The D feels like the character in your work. What makes the city such fertile ground as a setting?
Well, I've seen Detroit in the bad times, and I've seen it in the still reemerging good times.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something different about Detroiters.
Yes.
I mean, for decades, Detroit's gotten, you know, beat up in the ring, black eye, lost a tooth, cauliflower ears, bleeding broken nose, and we're never down for the count.
Never.
We always get up and reassert ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that attitude is something special. I don't think you see that in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I don't think you see that in Los Angeles. You might see it in New York, but everybody that's got that attitude in New York says, forget this, man, I'm out of here.
Right.
And then they go to Jersey. And
right.
God only knows.
I think that those cities have similar DNAs, though.
Yes. Yes.
Chicago has similar DNA to New York, to Los Angeles.
Yes.
I think Detroit has a different DNA because it was built on, you know, blue-collar mentality.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's not about falling down. It's about getting up every single
day.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes.
Which I kind of feel works so well for a mystery novel in a detective novel, right?
Yes.
Of like,
yes.
We see all of these characters that, you know, are picking themselves back up again.
Yes.
And, you know, another aspect of, you know, Detroit and your novels is kind of the social and political landscape that gets tied into them. And so, you know, how does that influence your storytelling as well?
Well, it's certainly not in the minutiae of creating a character. It's a part of the character's intellect and soul. I mean, we're all political people. That's how we move through our lives, whether we acknowledge it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a part of the environment that we move through. So we can all say, oh, I'm not political, but we are in our social lives, our intellectual lives. It's just a part of who we are. It's a part of our internal landscape.
Stephen, besides being the keynote at the Rally of Writers, what's next for you?
probably lunch.
That's right.
Yeah, and a trip to the peanut store.
Oh, yes. Downtown. Good job. So glad.
Yeah, I love that place.
And go to Cupie's across the street and have lunch.
I have.
Oh.
My father used to talk about Cupie's. But anyway, what's next yes. for me is finishing the fifth book in the series.
Okay.
I've taken a couple of years off, but polishing that story and ending the August Snow series and moving on to something else.
All right. So where can our listeners connect with you and follow your work?
They can connect with me through my website, but it is a part of Soho Press. That's my publisher, and they built my website. So I'm an old guy, so I don't remember, you know, websites or things like that.
We'll be sure to include it in the show notes with this episode.
Oh, great.
Sure.
Great. And I'll be reminded then.
Yes, yes. So, Rob, in addition to Stephen being at the Rally of Writers, can you give us kind of a brief overview of what else is going on that day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have several speakers coming. And it's important to note that people who come to the Writers Conference are varying levels of writing, some just entering, some, you know, several books behind them. We have a craft track for the beginning writers. And so that's four consecutive sessions of getting started writing, you know. We have a poetry track. In fact, one of our speakers this year is Esther Beelan, who's now teaching at MSU, but she is the current poet laureate of Durango, Colorado. She came to us from Colorado.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. One of our sessions is on publishing. We have someone from Mission Point Press coming to talk about the three different types of publishing. So indie publishing, traditional publishing, and a hybrid of the two. So you can get all your publishing questions answered there. And a person that seems to be bringing a lot of excitement, Jim C. Hines, who's a prominent fantasy author who lives in the mid-Michigan area, will be there. And Dedalion is bringing up.
I love this, yeah.
Colleen Gleason is also there, and she writes under three different pseudonyms. So,
interesting.
And she's very successful.
This state, Michigan, has an abundance of fantastic writers. And that's one of the great things about the rally, is getting these writers to come here and share their stories, share what it means to be a writer. I'm constantly amazed at the number of tremendous writers in this state.
Yeah. I agree with that, even just doing this podcast.
Yeah.
The amount of writers that we have to be on this podcast from this area and from Michigan has just been phenomenal. We keep coming up with more ideas than we could possibly use. So you're absolutely, absolutely true.
Yeah.
Rob, can you remind us once more of when and where Rally of Writers will be taking place?
Yes, it takes place April 11th. At LCC's West Campus. It goes from 8 to 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can get your tickets at arallyofwriters.com. And early bird registration only goes till March 31st. After that, the prices go up.
Okay.
So,
it's good to know.
It's a venue-based thing. We're not trying to be difficult.
That's okay. You can be difficult. No. Thank you so much, Stephen and Rob, for sharing this space with us today. We really appreciate you being here, and continue writing.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. And in the words of Miguel de Unamuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again, and we shall recognize each other.
examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Performing Arts presents 1984 by George Orwell, adapted for the stage by Nick Hearn. Winston Smith has been in prison for committing thought crimes against Big Brother. As part of his re-education, he is forced to relive key moments from his past, reenacting his mistakes alongside other thought criminals so that all may learn from his failure, especially his greatest crime of all, falling in love with Julia. George Orwell's 1984 remains a powerful and chilling vision of life under totalitarianism, set against a world of surveillance, control, and fear. Featured in LCC's Dart Auditorium, April 10th through the 12th, and April 17th and 18th. All performances are free to attend. Visit lcc.edu/showinfo for showtime details.
Hi, I'm Lisa Alexander, and I host a show called Who's That Star on LCC Connect. This show is all about an inside look at the LCC community, where you get a chance to meet our faculty and staff, plus learn about their passion projects at work and at home. You can catch Who's That Star here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
Just now, another kid dropped out of school. There's one every 20 seconds, over 200 kids an hour. That adds up to nearly 5,000 kids every school day. If we do nothing, 3.5 million kids won't receive a diploma over the next 4 years. But there is someone who can change that. And that someone is you. United Way knows that kids who have a caring adult in their life are more likely to make it. So make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because the path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Lansing Community College's School of Business incorporates areas of study including marketing, insurance, management, and more. Transfer options and direct degree options are both available depending on the area of study. To find out more about LCC's business programs, visit lcc.edu.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cut's Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
Welcome to Coach Cut's Corner, where we challenge limits, push for greatness, and develop athletes who thrive on and off the field. Our program is centered on discipline, self-belief, and relentless preparation. Each week, I bring you insights from my coaching journey, conversations with high performers, and lessons that drive winning habits. Today, I'm excited to sit down with sophomore infielder Parker Vaughn. From his Cedar Springs roots to making impact at Lansing, to a strong summer on the field, Parker's journey is one worth diving into. Let's get after it. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
First impressions?
It's pretty sweet in here. Little renovations going on, but I see the potential.
All right, Parker, let's start at the beginning. Growing up in Cedar Springs, what was your baseball journey like?
My baseball journey through Cedar was mainly just through the high school. I played freshman year. I remember the COVID year I actually got hurt, so I didn't play middle school. It was called 78ers, so I didn't really dive into that. But once freshman year came, pretty much just, nothing crazy. I was on varsity as a sophomore, and JV as a freshman a little bit, and I was able to really help the team out for three solid years.
All right, let's backtrack a little bit. What did a typical summer look like for you as a kid?
As a kid, I...
Besides warm weather.
Mainly just baseball. I remember playing for Great Lakes Baseball. It was my first travel team, I believe, at 12U.
Okay, where were they based out of?
They're based out of Lowell.
Okay.
Yeah, I played with a lot of kids from Lowell, a lot of kids from the Grand Rapids area. I don't know if it's still going. I know our field's pretty run down, but it was a solid start, I think.
Okay. So when you think back to like high school ball, what are some of the moments or the people that really shaped you as a player and a person? Because that's a pretty pivotal time. Yes, the youth ages are pivotal and premier in athletic development. But when you think back to high school, who are some of the people and things that really shaped you?
As far as through high school, I would say a lot of the leaders that I was able to just learn from, because like I said, I was on JV as a freshman, kind of on and off, and then sophomore year I really was the youngest on the team, so looking up to the seniors and just watching them go hard at practice, I got to learn a lot.
Okay. High school is often where players start figuring it out. It's a time where the brains are starting to mature, the bodies are starting to, you know, mature as well. Do you have a moment where you realized maybe the type of player that you wanted to be?
Yeah, I remember freshman year, I wasn't on varsity, but I got brought to districts. And I remember we played Rockford, and with game started off solid, we were heavy underdogs. And we were up about 2-0, and then we just lost it. Rockford took control of the game. We lost by a lot. And I just remember all the seniors, they were mad. They were sad, obviously. Their careers were over. And I just didn't want to feel that. I didn't want to feel like defeated and feel almost like a failure. So that's just the winning mindset, being able to go out there and compete. I think that was like, this is real, and at some point it's going to end as well. Mm-hmm. I got to see that.
Yeah, the finality of it all, even though it's not the final moments for you, you start seeing that and you start thinking about, what can I do to help maybe make this a little bit better, either for the people in front of me or the people behind me. Let's talk about your first season at Lansing. What stands out as you look back at year one now?
Pretty much what stands out to me was just so much development, mentally, physically, skill-wise as well. Coming in, I didn't feel like I stood out in any way as a freshman, and I kind of just felt like I was just part of the team. And then I was able to make big jumps mentally, as far as having a process, having, you know, a structure that I just stick to every day, and having consistency, and just being, learn how to be a great teammate as well. And from the leaders that we had, learn how to lead by example, things like that.
If you could go back and give yourself advice on day one when you showed up, what would it be now?
I think I would pretty much say, just if you're going to do something, do it to the fullest extent, and don't, you know, take a rep or two off at practice because, I don't know, you had an early morning lift or something. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, when you're getting ready for bed, those things that you didn't do might haunt you a little bit. But when you go to bed with full confidence that you gave your all to the day, you can rest easy.
And that ultimately builds confidence too in yourself. And I think confidence is usually wavering for most freshmen when they come into a college program. Doesn't matter what sport it is. There's a lot of uncertainty. You're typically getting a lot of different things thrown at you, and you're trying to see how you fit into all that as you look around and you see bigger, stronger players or faster or, you know, whatever it might be. And you're just, where do I fit into all this? Did you think you were going to play when you first started out? Like, I think I got a great shot of playing this season. Where were those thoughts at?
I would say during the summer, I was confident in myself. Yeah, I'll find a way to play. I've done it my whole life. I was always, quote unquote, the best player. But then I would say that first week, seeing just the sheer size of the guys we had, and everyone looked like they had their stuff going on, and everything was figured out. If you would have asked me the first week, I would have been like, is redshirting an option? Like,
was there a welcome to college baseball moment for you? Something that made you realize this game is played at another level?
100%. It was, okay. I remember in the fall at Muni, we were playing Mid-Michigan, and I was just on the bench that game, just watching my guys compete, okay. watching my leaders. And I remember Breck Baranowski hitting the furthest ball I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I getting myself into? Like, who is Breck? Who are these people? is this normal? Like, he kind of just shrugged it off. And that was definitely my welcome to college baseball.
I love that. And I love a Breck mention in this podcast. Yes. What a great kid who's still playing college baseball. If you had to think back on that season a little bit, do you remember the first pitcher that you faced?
Or in the regular season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it was at, I believe, Hines. Was it Hines?
I think so.
A big righty, throw hard, curveball, all the whole deal. I remember I struck out.
What'd you learn last year that you're carrying with you today? I think this question is a very poignant question because everybody learns different things that they carry with them. Sometimes it's what not to do. Sometimes it's what to do. You know, the same can be said about what to say or what not to say, you know. So what'd you learn last year that you're carrying with you this season?
I would say the biggest thing I learned last year was just having a process and sticking to it. And I think that I wouldn't say I did it perfectly last year, but I learned. And then this summer I was able to really stick to that and just stay consistent. And it was amazing.
You want to talk about your parents at all?
I love to talk about my parents, yes.
Okay. Well, your mom sent me a letter this summer, handwritten.
Yeah.
Does she do that often?
She likes to do things like that, yes.
Okay. Yeah. It arrived on my desk, and I opened it up, and it was a nice handwritten letter from your mom, and she was just thanking our coaching staff for helping you be a better person and develop and have fun playing the game and all that. And I thought, you know, well, that certainly helps with future playing time, but it also...
Thanks, Mom.
But it also is a very, very genuine thing. And, you know, anytime we see that kind of stuff, I try to write handwritten thank yous at least one a week to somebody. And it's just one of those things where we talk about in our program a lot about gratitude and mm-hmm. saying thank you and things like that. And it really goes a long ways with people. And I think part of it is it goes so far because there's not enough of it in our world today. Yeah. But definitely a huge shout out to your mom. Let's talk about summer ball a little bit. So you finish your LCC season. You have a great season. You play a lot. I think you played in about 41 games or so last year. You were on a really solid team, went 44-13, won a conference championship, you know, nationally ranked in the top 10. You were on a great team. And then you go into the summer and you play in the Shoreline League to mm-hmm. start with. And you do really well there, so well that you end up being the league MVP when the season's all over. But what's unique about it is you didn't even finish the season in the Shoreline League. You end up with the Muskegon Clippers, who I coached there for about 4 years and had a lot of great memories at Marshfield and had really enjoyed working for a strong organization. So do you want to talk about your summer a little bit?
For sure. So, like you said, I played 41 games in the spring. It was a long season, so I decided to go to the more chill route, play the Shoreline. I wanted to be able to still work on my development, speed, all that stuff, while still competing. So, yeah, we played. It was 5 games a week, one on Wednesday, 2 Saturday, Sunday. And the first thing I noticed is the competitiveness just wasn't there. Even though I had a great summer, I kind of started off a little shaky. But then there was a 2-week span where I hit 8 home runs in 9 games. It was...
What do you mean by, like, the competitiveness wasn't there? What was the prompt, or why was it a little bit different?
Yeah, I mean, I was still playing with college athletes, but the biggest difference I noticed between my team at LCC and the team there was just the mindsets were not to where I was expecting or where I was used to. There was just... It was like, oh, we can just lose. Or it was like, oh, when are we going home? I was like, I'm here to compete. Like, this isn't what I'm used to.
How did summer ball help you grow? What'd you take from it?
I would say it helped me grow by just, I was really able to see how having a process before and between every pitch and every at-bat in the dugout, on the field, I was just able to really crack down on that and just see it work, see the consistency in the 2 weeks where I couldn't be stopped. It was amazing. And I was like, when is this going to stop? But I never stopped doing my process and my consistency. It was
process wins. Not always immediately, but it does win. So you got the call to go to the Clippers. You got to play for not a ton of games. It was towards the end of their season at that point. And lo and behold, you had some success there too. What was that like going from the Shoreline League, which is a great summer league, and to the Great Lakes Summer Collegiate League, which is a step up in talent and stuff? What did you experience there?
Yeah, like you said, I didn't play many games. I played six. It was about 2 weeks. My first week was a road trip down to Ohio, so I thought that was crazy. We had a charter bus, which I had a couple in high school, but this was nice. It was nice. We had a super nice hotel, and the first thing I noticed was, like, we're back. This is baseball. This is the college baseball that I'm used to, and it was wood bat, which I'd been swinging wood bat with the Shoreline. It was cool. There was one friendly face. I got to play with Bakus, who was obviously one of my leaders in the spring, so I was happy to see him. And yeah, had some success. First game, I remember hitting 1-for-4 or 2-for-4, something like that, maybe with the bloop early in the game. But I had a line drive single to right field to score what turned out to be the winning run. I think we were up by 2 at the moment, and then I RBI made it 3, and then the team we're playing, the Joes, came back, and they scored 2 in the bottom of the 9th. So it turned out to be the winning run.
All right, let's move to present day. You're now back for year 2 here at Lansing. The expectations really haven't changed a whole lot, even though there's been some significant changes here positively. How are you applying everything you learned, both from last season and summer ball, into your daily routines now?
As far as my daily routine, I'm just staying consistent with the morning lifts, eating right, drinking right, doing my thing. And I also learned I'm trying to be the best leader I can on and off the field, setting an example for both the newcomers and the sophomores that are still here, as far as setting up before practice, during practice, laying out in the field, doing my job, and trying to just have a great practice mentality as far as we're here to get better and not just slack off.
Is there anything that you're doing this year that you weren't necessarily doing last year that has come from the growth, not maybe in our program, but also with summer ball, but also with just maturing and understanding things differently?
I would say for the most part, I'm doing the same thing as far as helping my teammates, doing what the practice plan says, being ready, being more of a vocal leader now, as okay. That's kind of the role that I've stepped into. And
is that challenging?
I don't think it's been too bad. No, I feel like last year I kind of laid the concrete for it, and now I'm just more showing it out. As far as like when freshmen ask me questions, I'm always there to help. I really want to be the guy that people can go to whenever they need anything.
That's a positive outlook, and that's what you want to have in life. And leadership is one of these things that you're not necessarily born with, but sometimes you get thrust into the situations where you have to be a leader, and sometimes you don't necessarily know how to do that. Some people think that being a verbal leader is the best way to go about it, and at times, being a verbal leader is super important, but then there's also the times where you've got to be able to model the leadership. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to do what you're asking others to do. You know, that's super important. So I call that modeling. And I think overall, we've seen a lot of growth with you since you've come in here. You just keep stacking bricks in the journey, and you're a very great human being, and that helps, and you do model, and I think a lot of players look to you for guidance, and sometimes I don't even know if you realize people are watching you, but they are, and that's why I say, like, the modeling, man, that's super important to be able to do. What's been your biggest focus on development this year? We talk a lot about development in our program. We strive for it. It's not always perfect. You know, we don't look at it as the best, but we're trying to absolutely do the best that we possibly can with everything that we have to try to leverage you and your teammates forward. So what's been your biggest focus coming into this season, 2 weeks into the season, that you're focusing on development? What is it?
Yeah, for sure. So during the summer, I did a lot of speed work, things like that, trying to get more athletic. I feel like that was one of my weaknesses last spring. But as far as...
So you're saying you're slow?
I'm saying I've been slow in the past, and I'm trying to get faster. Speaking of that, I can backtrack a lot back to Little League days. I remember I used to be called Cheetah. That was a joke. They wrote it on the lineup card because I was not fast at all. And all my teammates and coaches, they loved that.
Love that. You've spoken about routines. Do you have a pregame routine that you stand by?
I've been having a routine for sure. During the summer, my teammates can attest to this. I changed up my music during the rides to the Shoreline games and during the rides to the Clippers games. I threw on some Mexican music. It kind of gave me into like a little flow state, and it was really fun. Just I enjoyed it. I kind of just bought into it, and I'm not saying that's the key, but it was fun. And
it's your key,
yeah.
and that's all that matters. We talk about details matter in our program a lot. You've probably heard it 10,000 times already. John Wooden said it's the little details that are vital. Little things make big things happen. In year two, the details matter more than probably ever in our program. What little things are you paying attention to that you might have overlooked as a freshman?
I think the things that I've been focusing on is my interactions with people. I don't want to, you know, I'm trying to be the best leader I can, but I don't want to come off harsh. So I'm just really connecting with people. And I think the little things that you do in conversations and things like that is a really attest to that and the character that you want to be and the leader that you want to be.
When you look at the season ahead, what excites you most about this team? I get this question all the time. What excites you most about this team?
I think what excites me most is just the great team that we can be. It's obviously a really different team than last year. We have two returning starters for the most part. So I'm excited to see who steps up, in what way they step up, and how much they step up, really, and just what kind of team can we be. We have a lot of, our ceiling's pretty high, I would say.
Okay. This is one of those things where it's either treads real well or doesn't, but is there a guy on this team that you're thinking is about ready to break out?
Yeah, 100%. I would say Carson Sweet. This kid shows up every day ready to compete. His mindset is elite, and I can't wait to see what he does. He's trained with us before practice, after practice. He's really smart, intellectual. I've been able to talk with him a lot regarding the game. So, yeah, I'd say Sweet.
All right.
Well, it's actually my mom's maiden name as well, Sweet, okay. So I'm kind of connected to him.
We'll quote you on that, and Carson is a great kid, and we have a lot of great kids in our program. Carson needs to continue to learn that details matter and lock in on some processes, but that's all part of the maturation process of not only freshmen, but all of us, just trying to get a little bit better. What do you see for yourself moving forward, both in baseball and life beyond, you know, beyond this season and beyond the field? What are you seeing for yourself?
Beyond the field?
Yeah, when you grow up.
I think when I grow up, I'm just excited to just keep on being a leader as far as in a family. Once I find a family, which we're working on.
Yeah, you always got to find those families.
Once I find a family, I'm excited to just kind of be the best leader I can, you know, setting an example for my kids, setting an example for my wife and just the life that we want to live.
That's what makes Parker Vaughn so great. Winning isn't just about stats. It's about growth, about lessons, and where those lessons can take you. Big thanks to Parker for joining me and sharing his story from Cedar Springs to LCC and beyond. Around here, we're focused on building athletes and teams that compete at the highest level, not just on game day, but in every aspect of their journey. Until next time, keep stacking bricks and go Stars. Coach Cut's Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios with Dedalion Lowry providing engineering and production assistance. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all forms of social media. Our program has been built and maintained with the help of many great people. If you want to be part of our mission, you can donate using the link in the show notes below. You can learn more at CoachCutter.com and more about our team at LCCStars.com. See you next time.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect.
a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.